It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. On Thursday at Carnegie Mellon University's McConomy Auditorium, longtime New York Times columnist Bob Herbert kicks off a nationwide book tour to promote his new book, Losing Our Way, An Intimate Portrait of a Troubled America. For 18 years, Mr. Herbert wrote a widely read, award-winning, twice-a-week column for The Times. His new book chronicles the struggles of average Americans in a country where misplaced economic priorities have overtaken reality. Bob Herbert joins us by phone from New York. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, Paul. It's great to talk to you.
In his column today, Post-Gazette columnist Tony Norman talks about your book and describes what he calls your moral outrage at the ways America's political elite have betrayed the people. Describe how your outrage has manifested over the years.
Well, you know, for the longest time as I was writing the column, you know, it was just obvious that ordinary Americans were getting the short end of the stick, primarily economically, but also in other ways. I grew up in those early post-World War II decades, which I think may have been perhaps the best time to grow up in America. Jobs were plentiful, education was inexpensive, very affordable, and there were just opportunities all over the place. And now it just seems like opportunities are constrained, that people are having difficulty. If they are working, very often they have to work three jobs at a time to support their families. Many of the jobs that are being created are low wage, part time. So we've been through a long, tough period, and I think, as many Americans have said, according to polls, that we're moving in the wrong direction.
And this kind of inequity is no stranger to America. America at the turn of the century, from the 19th to the 20th century, the majority of the wealth in this country was in the hands of a concentrated few in the upper class. Mm-hmm. We managed, as you pointed out in your previous answer, particularly with regard to the post-World War II years, we got away from that. And there was more equity in the middle of the 20th century. And then now, 50, 60 years later, we're looking at inequity again. How did we get away from an equitable distribution of wealth?
I think we lost sight of the fact that you had to pay attention to what's happening with working people in this country, whether they're middle class, what we used to call the working class, or poor people. We got away from the idea that you had to have some sort of security and a decent income if you were going to have a middle class standard of living. We got into this idea that, oh, the market will take care of everything. Government is the problem. You don't really have to work at this. All you have to do is just let the very wealthy and the corporations and the banks have their way, and they'll lead us to economic growth and a promised land of wide prosperity. Well, that doesn't work. I mean, what happens if you let the corporations and the banks and the very wealthy do what they want to do? They'll do those things that concentrate wealth in their hands, wealth and power in those hands. And ever since at least the early 1980s, that's what we've been doing. And we've gotten to a situation now where ordinary people very often feel powerless. They don't even think that in many cases voting is going to help. And so we're in trouble. We are now at the point where some of the biggest challenges facing the country, we seem unwilling even to engage them, whether it's the problem of continued unemployment and underemployment, or whether it's the fact that we seem to be perpetually at war, or whether it's the fact that we know our infrastructure is in terrible shape, in many cases decrepit, but we won't take the steps to rebuild it. It's really a perverse set of circumstances.
And it's interesting because when you look at the latest figures that show the unemployment rate has fallen to 5.9%, and these are figures released just last week, it makes it seem as though, oh, we've got this under control, but those numbers don't really tell the whole story, do they, Bob?
No, and what's interesting is the press tends to focus on those monthly job numbers. So if unemployment ticks down a tenth of a point or two-tenths of a point, or you get X number of jobs created, especially if it's 200,000 or more jobs, the tone of the stories is that, wow, things are getting better, or maybe even substantially better. But it doesn't tell the story at all. One, it doesn't talk about the enormous numbers of people who are out of work but who aren't counted as unemployed because they've been out of work for so long that they're no longer looking for work. So they're just dismissed. We act like they're not unemployed. And then there's the question of what kinds of jobs are being created. Many of the jobs that are being created are low wage and part time, without any benefits and without any measure of security at all. In many cases, workers will show up and they won't know from one week to the next what shift they're going to be working. So you have to wait until, let's say, Tuesday or Wednesday to find out if the following week they need you on the morning shift or the afternoon shift. Are you going to get 3 days of work or only two? It's really a sad state of affairs.
Well, a lot of what you're describing used to be handled by unions, which would stick up for people and say, for example, you can't have what they call short turnaround, where if you're working till 11 o'clock at night, you should have at least 12 hours before you're called back in to work the next day. So you wouldn't be called mm-hmm. until after 11 the next morning, for example. But is that part of the problem here? Is that people aren't is that unions have been weakened and so there's nobody to stand up for the worker?
Unions have been weakened, and that was deliberate on the part of the corporate powers in this country. There was a sustained effort to diminish the power of unions, and that effort was remarkably successful. Now, there were self-inflicted wounds by the unions along the way. It's not like it's just a stark picture. But the primary reason for the demise of unions in this country was a sustained anti-union campaign by corporate America. What happens is the workers are then just left out there. Whether you're pro-union or not, the fact is that workers have to be organized in some way for them to have any clout in the workplace. If you're just an individual worker walking into the boss's office and saying, hey, I need a raise, or I'm working part-time, but I think I deserve to be full-time, or I need paid vacation here. This is a job without any real time off. The boss will just say, no, you can't have it, and you have to turn around and walk out. Whereas if you're organized, then you have some leverage against the bosses, against the corporations. Most workers in America right now are not organized. The flip side is that the corporations, the financial institutions, they are all incredibly well organized. They have lawyers, they have accountants, they have public relations specialists, they have professional associations. So they're very well organized against workers who are out there as individuals on their own.
Isn't it inevitable that this will also be detrimental to the wealthy? I mean, don't they or the powers that be see this?
I think that we've got so much short-termism in this country that's not recognized. What you just said is a fact. This is the state of affairs that we're talking about right now is unsustainable. This is not a healthy society, and if we have another breakdown, sure, it'll harm the very wealthy. But our tendency now, especially by those who are calling the shots in terms of policies, is to look at the short term, to look at how much money we can make, you know, to try and see what the return is on the stock market this quarter, next quarter, not next year or the year after that. So this is why I've titled the book Losing Our Way. I think that if we continue in this direction, then we're going to find ourselves in circumstances that are even worse, I believe, than the Great Recession and the housing meltdown. But I don't think that it's too late. I mean, I think that there is a great deal of potential clout still left among voters, among ordinary workers in this country. And so I'm calling in the book for a movement. I wish it would be a movement organized around employment and the rights of workers, but a movement of some sort that would sort of redress the imbalance and bring a little bit more power and economic stability to working people.
We're talking with Bob Herbert, former New York Times columnist and author of the book Losing Our Way, An Intimate Portrait of a Troubled America. He will be appearing in Pittsburgh later this week to promote that book. And you left the Times to write this. How did you decide what to focus on and how to tell the story of this era of, as you call it, perpetual war and economic decline?
A lot of the issues and themes that are in the book were issues that I focused on as a columnist at the time. So I've been pretty familiar with all of these matters. What I wanted to do was get closer to the ordinary people that I had been writing about and spend more time with them, and then also have a little more space to tell these stories. I mean, the columns are about 750 or 800 words at a pop, and then you move on to the next topic. In this way, I was able to get a read of how large numbers of people were feeling. I was able to tell specific stories that illustrated the trends that are out there. And I was able to spend a fair amount of time actually just thinking about and subsequently writing about some of the things that we need to do.
In part of your book, you talk about the tactics used by parents, teachers, and students to counteract Governor Corbett's budget priorities. And Pennsylvania isn't the only state where this scenario is playing out. What compelled you to come here?
Well, it's really interesting. I was at a conference out in Long Island in New York when a woman named Kathy Newman from Pittsburgh came up to me and said, you know, you're talking about these issues. You ought to see what we're doing in Pittsburgh. And I took her up on it. And Jesse Ramey and Kathy Newman, they were friends, were college-level teachers who had children in the public schools in Pittsburgh. And they were among the leaders of this grassroots organization in Pittsburgh fighting back against these enormous budget cuts to public education that Governor Corbett and the legislature had imposed. And I was really fascinated by this effort because it wasn't just limited to Pittsburgh. They became part of a much larger, actually statewide effort fighting on behalf of public education. And it got to the very heart of the point I was trying to make in my book, that I thought that our elected officials had fallen down on the job, that they really weren't looking out for the interests of ordinary people, and therefore it was important for ordinary people to fight back, to organize in a sustained and very assertive way to sort of turn matters around. And that's exactly what I saw happening in Pittsburgh. It was very inspirational. And so this fight on behalf of public education by parents in Pittsburgh and, in fact, across Pennsylvania became a very significant part of my book.
And so that's part of why you're coming to the city, correct?
That is exactly right. They were kind enough to invite me down, and I jumped at the chance, and I am really, really looking forward to it.
We have a comment from David on Twitter who asks, referring to the overwhelming imbalances in the distribution of wealth and income inevitability in this country. David says, is this condition stagnation or worse?
I think that it's worse than stagnation. We've gone through stagnation, but now we're in a situation where median income in this country and median wealth in this country are both lower than they were some years ago. So we're actually going backwards. Stagnation would mean that we were sort of treading water or staying the same. That's not what's happening. Working people are falling behind.
Let's go to a caller. We have Richard in Greensburg who wanted to join the conversation. Richard, we're running a little short on time, but go ahead.
All right. My comment is basically, I think we're ignoring the history here. We're comparing the situation as it is now to the situation after World War II, when all the other industrial powers had been hugely damaged. And if you were going to buy anything in the world, you were largely buying American. And now we're facing not only those powers resurgent, but also emerging markets that are underselling us on wages. And it's just a different world today.
Well, you make a good point, Richard, and I'll let Bob jump in. But it sounds like the problem here is not about the economic opportunities. It's about how corporations are capitalizing on economic opportunities and what they're sharing with their workers. Am I right, Bob?
That's exactly right. I mean, the caller is correct in the sense that we're looking at a radically different landscape than the one that existed in those post-World War II decades. But one of the things that that is fair to compare is the fact that the benefits of that booming economy in the post-World War II years were much more widely shared, that working people got a larger share of the benefits from that booming economy. What's happening now is the elite in this country are taking a much larger share of both the income and the wealth in this country than they have previously. That's got to change. The worker makes a good point about globalization and technological advancement, but we're not paying close enough attention as to what we ought to be doing for working people to cope with those changes. So it's a two-part question. One, the benefits need to be widely shared. Two, the changes, which have been radical in many cases, need to be studied more closely so that we can figure out how working people won't be so badly harmed by these changes.
And the biggest danger of these overwhelming imbalances is what?
I think that the economy actually gets out of control so that we have another enormous breakdown. But also, when you have sustained periods of tremendous inequality, it's a recipe for social breakdown. After a while, you start to have the different classes pitting themselves against one another, and you have people playing the blame game. You don't have a society that's working together. You have a society that's working at loggerheads. And you really don't want that to happen.
Bob Herbert has been our guest. He is a former New York Times columnist and author of the book Losing Our Way, An Intimate Portrait of a Troubled America. He will be stopping in Pittsburgh again on Thursday at CMU's McConomy Auditorium to promote the book and kick off his nationwide book tour. Bob Herbert, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for joining us here on Essential Pittsburgh.
Paul, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Coming up, business contributor Rebecca Harris looks at the business of pink. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.